Welcome to Running Off the Rails. My name is Raymond O'Connor, and today I'm joined by a special guest and friend of the show, Ben Norris. Ben, do you want to introduce yourself and where you're from and where people can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. My name's Ben Norris. I am a radio presenter and dungeon master from the UK, and I am the creator and host of the D&D podcast for everyone, We Speak Common. You can find me online either personally through the handle BenJFNorris or pretty much anywhere as at We Speak Common, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. Searching We Speak Common brings you to all of our locations online that you can listen to the show. And we've just released a brand new actual play series that you can grab now called The Cosmic Causeway. It is a Spelljammer mini-series.
I just listened to the first episode. I gotta say, Phoebe's character is really excellent. She really hit it out of the park.
Bugs is an incredible character, and so obviously Phoebe and I are partners, we live together, and there was a lot of conversation about, like, her character. She was making it, she was so excited, and I honestly might be the best character she's ever made. And that's not from me, that's from her too. So yeah, well worth a listen. I think the day we're recording, episode 2 is out now, so people are starting to get their hands on that, which is exciting because that's when we sort of worked out what we were doing. It's the first time we did an actual play, so like the quality jumps and everyone's like, okay, we're into it now. And I think Patreon's just got episode 3 today as well, so that's even more exciting.
I was listening to your show, mm-hmm. and something that really struck me about the Cosmic Causeway was how much care and effort, it's clear, goes into your descriptions of your setting and the mm-hmm. surroundings that your players are experiencing. And this made me reflective of my own work as a DM and made me realize that I don't think that I pay enough attention to my descriptions. And then this made me think of, is that because I don't care as much about the descriptions, or is it because I am prioritizing other things? Or perhaps, I think with all DMs, there might be like an experience gap in specific areas of different elements of Dungeons and Dragons. And this made me think, what are the things that I prioritize? And you were coming onto the show today, so I was like, I could just ask Ben what his priority list is. And perhaps this reflective exercise will be helpful to other DMs out there to make them realize, oh, if they're feeling kind of bored or stuck in their ways, or they're feeling like DMing is easy for them, or they're just looking for the next way that they can expand and work on their craft, this might highlight some areas of DMing that maybe they didn't realize they could be focusing on and working on specifically. So Ben, mm-hmm. I'm going to do the easy thing and and ask you to share your priority list first.
Absolutely. So I think first of all, the thing I'll preface this with is that I think that as much as it kind of sounds like a little bit of a cop-out answer, everyone has their own style of DMing, right? Everyone's got their own way of doing things, I guess. For me, and I think this is going to come across when I tell you, I've sort of thought about this. I've made a little list. It's not exhaustive, but when I tell you the list, I think you'll feel this. And for me, the thing that drew me into D&D and the thing that I enjoy about it the most is the storytelling aspect, right? I am, in life, I'm a storyteller. It's what I do. It's, you know, everything that I want to do in life, somewhere, somehow, I can link back to storytelling. And I think that that's why things like putting time and effort into my descriptions and character moments and things like that, I think that's why that shines through, because that's kind of the draw for me. And luckily I've got players who feel very similarly. You know, they're there to tell a story. So I think if you're going to listen to this and you think, oh, I don't put that at the top of my list, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you might put something I haven't even put on my list at the top, but it's just to show, you know, everybody does things differently and there's nothing wrong with that.
I think it's possible that the ordering that we choose, or the ordering that's implicit or internal to us, may actually be a really useful tool for informing the differences in tone of our games. And what I mean by that is someone who prioritizes storytelling, like you, may have a game that really feels like a rich and developed narrative, where someone who prioritizes getting the mechanics just right or balancing that encounter just perfectly, and that's where they're spending all of their prep time, may run a more mechanical kind of board game-esque tabletop experience. And that's not better or worse, but it is certainly different. And maybe this will serve as a way that someone can change their style by consciously pointing more effort at the things that maybe they weren't paying attention to in the past.
Yeah, and that's not to say that I don't use different styles either. Like my long-term campaigns tend to be very focused in-world kind of stories. I mean, you play in one of them. The characters are very rooted in the world. They have purpose and goals and dreams and aspirations. But, I mean, look, we're recording this before the weekend of Halloween, and on Halloween I'm running Strahd Must Die Tonight in space, which is going to be this ridiculous one shot. Like, I've still built it with a lot of story in there and a lot of like gothic horror Halloweeny stuff, but that's where my players are coming in, and one of them saying, I'm going to play a fairy and I'm going to play this and I'm going to be a Loxodon priest. Like, I still have games where it's different. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just a proof point that lists are going to be different for everyone. Styles are going to be different for everyone. And that's okay. That's probably a good thing. We don't want to be playing the same game, do we? So I have done two lists because I was thinking about this. There's the priorities change for me in two different states. And they probably alter slightly in lots of different ways. And to be honest, it's probably more of a flux, a thing that's constantly moving. Everything's always changing between all of the states of play, prep, post-game, pre-game, during game, all of that. But I've tried to break them down into two lists. So we'll start with my priorities when I'm preparing a game. At the top for me is story and plot and pacing. And I link those together because for me, I find it's helpful to define those as different things. So for me, the story is the overall story of the campaign. I know, you know, what the bad guy is aiming to do, what their goal is, what they're working towards, all of that. I know, you know, what all the factions are trying to do, all that kind of stuff that's going to take place over the length of the campaign. The plot is what the characters are experiencing, the stuff that they're getting drip fed during each session, the stuff that's happening with their backstories, all that kind of bits and bobs. And then the pacing, I mean, if you've listened to any of We Speak Common, you'll know that pacing is the most important thing, in my opinion, for any session. Is up there because I've got to take the story, I've got to take the plot, I've got to work with them together and make sure I'm delivering both in the right way, the right tone, in the right time, with the right pacing. So those are my top priorities. Then it comes to character moments. And for me, that's moments where the spotlight gets to go onto a particular character and they get a chance to flex their backstory, or maybe have a moment with an NPC or another character where it's just them talking. You know, moments that those players are going to remember those characters for. You know, my fighter, who's an ex-gladiatorial guy who's got an anger problem, if he gets a character moment where he gets to open up and have a soft conversation about his emotions with the party cleric, like, I'm going to remember that as a character moment. So those are the second most important thing for me when I'm prepping out a session. Is there space for these character moments? Then it's game and mechanical elements. So once I've got the story and the plot and the pacing lined out and I know what's going to happen in the session, once I know there's opportunity for character moments, doesn't mean they'll necessarily happen, but as long as there's a chance for them, once I know they're there, then I can build the game mechanics around that. So I know that I want there to be a chance for characters to talk over the fire on Midnight Watch. Cool. Do I want there to be an encounter there? Not really, but I know they're going to be camping maybe twice this session, so I will build an encounter to occur on one of them. So there's at least one opportunity for a character moment and one opportunity for encounter. You know, if I know there's going to be some sort of encounter anyway, I'll build that and I'll do all of the balancey stuff. And at the bottom of the list, after all of that's done, is forward planning. And that's me looking through my prep and going, okay, I've got everything I want for this session. I'm happy with it. Have I put in any plot hooks I need to? Have I got spaces here where things could develop and change? Am I linking it back to the overall campaign? What's going to happen potentially next session? I don't usually think of that stuff because players do things that we don't expect and you kind of have to roll with that. But I do a little bit of forward planning in the sense that I run some thought experiments and I think, okay, if this goes the way I think it's going to go, what's the potential to happen in the session later? And that's just a nice way to prepare me for the next time I'm going to prepare. So those are my four things. They're my priorities, and that's probably the order. but that's just when prepping. So should you want to talk about that?
Oh my gosh. I like how your four things are actually seven things, where the most important thing are three separate things.
Well, yeah, I did think that, but I find that I can't think of... So, like, okay, so let's take...
Well, it's like a food pyramid where there's a category. There's the most important category where all the things that fall into that category are equally most important. Yeah, if you had to choose, could you split apart those three?
Oh, God, okay.
When you remove one from the three-legged stool, the whole thing comes falling down.
So, yeah. So I say my most important is story, plot, and placing. And I don't think I can talk about story and plot without them being together. So I'm going to class story as one, and that's both in session and overall, because they're linked, right? They're the same thing in a way. I just like to think of them differently. Pacing. I always say pacing is the most important thing. I think... God, this is a difficult question. You got me here. So if I was just looking at one session, I'm looking at one session, what's the most important thing? I'm going to say pacing. If I'm looking at a campaign and I've been playing for a few weeks and I know we've got weeks to go, I'm probably going to put story and plot above pacing.
That's very interesting. So I'm seeing parallels between our two styles or our two priority lists, which is not surprising because I've listened to every single episode of We Speak Common, and I started listening to your show during a time where I really started to treat Dungeons & Dragons more as a craft instead of a board game. So it's not shocking that those episodes of We Speak Common kind of like formed the way that I approach DMing a game. And then there are some things that I think are divergent, and I think that's pretty interesting as well. What I noticed was in that list, you don't have kind of like descriptions or creative writing in there anywhere. And I guess, does that mean that you know that you will be able to generate that content on the fly because you're just that confident in your ability to like describe a scene?
Yes and no. There are, most of the time I don't write descriptions. Most of the time I they're in my brain. They're there. I don't write them. They're just there. And I think that's part of me as a creative person. Everything I am a creative person. Like, my job's a creative job. Like, I'm one of those people. That sounds like a bad thing. You know what I mean? One of those dirty creatives. But yeah, I know that I can articulate what I'm seeing in my imagination well enough that I don't have to write every single thing out. But then again, there are important ones that I will write out. So for example, this Halloween one shot I'm going to do, the setup for a one shot is very important. I've written that out. That's something I'm going to read. You know, I've thought about it. I've tried to, and usually when I'm writing as well, and this just sort of talks about how I kind of can do it off my cuff, is that I will just say something. Like, I'll sit at my computer and I will talk out the scene as if I was doing it to a group, and then I will write it. So that's how I generate. I don't think, oh, what do I want to show? I want to show a castle with some lightning. Oh, let's write that. I just say it and then I write it. Which, if I was a new DM and I heard someone say that, I'd be so angry. I'd be like, that's not helpful at all. But that's kind of just what I do. However, to kind of answer the question, it's not in the list because for me, descriptions and scene setting is kind of a part of both the story and plot and the character moments. That for me, the world is a character. The world is this ever-evolving presence in the game, and has as much weight on the game as the characters have on the game and the story. So when I'm planning the story and I'm planning the plot and I'm walking through that in prep, I'll know, you know, for example, they might be in a jungle or they might be in a haunted mansion or whatever. So I'll know kind of what the things are that they'll be seeing and hearing. And that just sparks my imagination. And then I leave a little bit of room for adapting to what the players say or experience. So if they're in a haunted mansion and I say, oh, you know, you're walking in and the floorboard creaks beneath you and there's cobwebs hanging down from the Gothic architecture, and then one of the players go, oh, is it like cold? I'm like, yes, a shiver runs down your spine. That's not in a box text. I can deviate and I can just add that stuff in, which builds on their immersion because they've suggested it.
It's interesting. So in a way, it's so important that it is a part of everything.
Mm. Yeah, for me, it absolutely is.
Right. But at least in your organization of the things that you are focused on, the things that take up brain space when you are prepping a session of D&D, it doesn't get its own slot. Perhaps because you mentioned that you're a creative person, perhaps it is because you have achieved a level of mastery in that element of the game, where now you do not need to focus on it. You can rely on your experience and your practice and your imagination. And I think that's very interesting, because when I'm writing a description, it is a thing that I do. This needs a description, and I'm going to spend an hour and a half writing a description for this thing so that it's awesome. I'm sure it will not surprise you that there are authors out there who write their entire book via dictation. Mm-hmm. So your practice of kind of speaking out the scene and then writing afterwards is not all that crazy.
So I'm not going to presume to have mastered anything. I love that's what you've taken from that. But I think that it's just something I've always been able to do. It's like something I can do is I can imagine something and I can describe the way it looks, the way it smells, the way it sounds. Like, that's just a skill I've had, probably because I spent a lot of time in my own imaginary worlds as a child. You know, that's what draws me into D&D. So yeah, and I think it doesn't appear on my list because it just doesn't need to. It's such a key part to it that I guess in a way it would be at the top, but you're right, it doesn't take brain space for me. And that's not to say that there aren't those scenes where I sit down and I have to write them and get them right, but most of the time I don't.
This may shock you, but there are some DMs out there who describe kind of just in an object way, there are five goblins. One has a snaggle tooth. The other is missing its leg. The other one has spiky hair. They are 10 feet away from you. Their concern is not delivering those descriptions and that descriptive language of the scene.
Yeah, I see that. I think if I'm a player at a table, and it's very rare that I am, because I've always been the DM, but when I am, I need to have enough of a description to actively imagine what's happening. Like, if I can't see it in my brain, I'm not there, right? And I always want to give my players the ability to see the world, hear the world, smell the world. And if they can do that, and if they've got that level of immersion from my descriptions, then I'm happy. I've achieved something. And there have been times when I've achieved that. I mean, I remember running Curse of Strahd years ago when it came out, and having a session where something very important, one of those character moments, was happening between one character and Madame Ava, a very important NPC in the adventure. And two of the other players had a moment where I heard one say to the other, "I can't look away." Those words. And those words will ring in my mind forever now, because that was the moment I went, okay, I've done it. I've achieved it today. Remember this moment. This is what you're aiming for. You're aiming for that I can't look away moment, because for them, they were there. They were seeing it. They were hearing it all. And that's what I want to achieve. And I guess now, the more I talk about it, the more I realize that, yeah, that world, that ability to step into it yourself as a player and be there and forget who you are, that should be the top of my list. But it's not something that ever occurs to me, because it's just something that I always want to be giving.
That's awesome. I like that a lot.
I like that a lot. That was a fun realization for me.
Well, I'm glad that this thought exercise was as useful, or at least a little bit useful, for you, because I know it's been very useful for me. So maybe we do have limited time, so I'll share my priority list. It is not as comprehensive as yours. I wish that I had gotten a sneak peek of yours. Now I feel like the kid who you both show up with a presentation or a poster board, mm-hmm. and the one person like unveils their poster board, and they made it out of like wood burned mahogany, and I have just the like the cardboard the cardboard rectangle from Target.
That's okay. I mean, you've got to remember, I've been thinking about this stuff for about 10 years at this point. So
it's true. So similar to you, but based on the conversation we had, I actually kind of made two different lists, or like a caveated list. And mm-hmm. I realized that my priorities are very different when I am planning and running the game. And then...
Yeah, I do have a very small in-session list that we can jump into in a bit as well.
Perfect. We'll dive into that if we have enough time at the end.
Yeah.
So when I'm prepping, I plan plot. And what I've realized, so I've been doing a lot of reading about creative writing recently as a dimension that I could investigate and maybe bring some valuable stuff back to Dungeons and Dragons. And I think what I'm realizing is I plan my plots in Milieus, which is a writing tool where you introduce a thing, and then you introduce A, plot element A, you introduce plot element B, you introduce plot element C, you close plot element C, you open D, close D, and then you close B and you close A. And by doing that nesting, it's almost like a nesting doll, you deliver on promises to the player. And this isn't something that I do perfectly, but what I'm realizing is that I start off with what are my players going to hopefully accomplish this session? So like a beginning and end to the session. And it doesn't always go that way. They run off the path, but usually I'll just run the session for as long as it takes for the players to find some sort of resolution to that thing that they set out to do in the beginning of the session. So what are we going to do today? When the answer that the players have to that question is usually when that question gets answered and finished, that's when I'll end the session, is what it seems like. So that's when I'm prepping. That's the thing that I do first, is the plot point. And then there's the little plot breadcrumbs that you kind of like sprinkle to get the players excited about the things that will happen later in the campaign. And then what I do after that, I'm sure it won't be that surprising to you, is I try to make sure the game mechanics that I'm going to present in the session support the fiction of what I'm presenting. So if one of the plot elements is that they're going to meet a magician who is supposed to be a master illusionist, and their wizard tower has a bunch of illusions, I will spend a considerable amount of time digging into the mechanics of the things that are important to the plot that the players will interact with, and figure out how those things interact with the mechanics that they have available. And then with the free time that I have, I will write descriptions. And if I can't write descriptions ahead of time, I rely on my ability to kind of like do them in the moment to a satisfactory level. But I have found mm-hmm. that I am not good enough at it innately, where I am pleased with the result of me doing it off the cuff at the table. The quality difference, if I do it ahead of time and prep a description ahead of time, is leaps and bounds greater than what happens mm-hmm. at the table, which makes me realize, I think, that I need to spend more time practicing that so I can do it more reliably when I have to improvise it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, practice makes perfect is the phrase, isn't it? And doing it more is always going to help, as well as the fact that, like, what I found was really useful for me. I mean, I've been a radio presenter for a long time now, and a big part of being a radio presenter is that you'll be given things that you have to say on air. You know, there are ads you have to read, or there are competition reads and things, and you'll always get the note. Make it your own, though. You know, don't just do it specifically as we've written it. So you have to get very good at being given a script and then making it sound like it's yourself and you're saying it off the cuff and it's not something you're reading. So I found that, and Phoebe said this to me recently, she said, you know, you're really good at not making it sound like you're reading box text when you're running an adventure. And I was like, good, that's something I never want my players to know what is and isn't coming from a module, because the whole game should feel like it's theirs and their experience and not something that anyone could be having, just something that they are having. But doing that, getting used to taking something that's written and making it sound like it's coming from you, I think is a great place to start with trying to get better at making just off the cuff descriptions that you're happy with. And it's funny because I listen back to some of Cosmic. I mean, I listen to the whole thing back because I've been editing it over the past 8 months. But when I listen to me describing things, I'm like, I talk so slowly, or I put in gaps, I put in breaks. I'm like, I don't like, I take so long to work out what word I'm saying. But I'm not, like, to anybody else, like, I'm probably talking absolutely fine. But to me, I'm like, I could be better at that. So we're all perfectionists, aren't we?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that for anyone who feels good about their descriptions, but they feel like, kind of like you said, it sounds like box text. It sounds like something that they've prepared. A good way to take that next step is to maybe read through what you have written 2 times, 3 times. And then when it comes time to perform it, put the text aside, the work that you did writing it in the first place, and the times that you rehearsed it and read through it and reminded yourself of some of the things that you wanted to say or some of the metaphors and descriptive language that you wanted to use, that will still come through in your delivery. But because you're not reading off something, it will be from you. I found that to be true in Dungeons and Dragons, delivering descriptions for things and for just presenting in the business place.
Yeah, 100%. Do you want to hear a little bit of the in-game priority list?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is shorter. So there's only 3 things on this, although you might break this down into 5 again based on my last one. So for me, and like I say, I think this probably is actually the same list. It just kind of shifts importance as the game begins. The top thing is player enjoyment and player moments. So it's the same as part 2, those character moments, but for players. So are the players getting to experience those moments? Are they enjoying them? Are they having a fun time? That is the most important thing in a session for me all the way through. And I say player moment rather than character moment because when I'm prepping, I'm thinking of what the character is going to experience. When we're playing, I'm thinking about what the players are experiencing. This harkens back to a conversation I've had with you before, I think, on the show about how things like meta knowledge is more for me. It's dramatic irony. It's not a bad thing. It's not metagaming. It's dramatic irony. Does the player know something the character doesn't? Good. Let's use it. Let's enhance their enjoyment with that. Then it's plot and immersion. Are they immersed in the game and are they picking up the plot pieces? And then it's the mechanical elements, because as much as I don't love the rule of cool phrasing, it's a rule that I roll by. You know, if the player wants to perform something specifically and the mechanics just don't quite get it, I'll usually waiver it. So, you know, things like, Hexblade Warlock, and you want to bamf away your weapon, interact with an object and then bamf it back because you're like holding on to something or the moment cries for it, that's not going to massively mess the game up. I'll allow it, you know, things like that. But also if a player says to me, I say, you know, I need you to do me a strength check, and they're like, well, could I come at this obstacle in this specific way and make it a dex check, I'll be like, yeah, fine. If you can explain how you're doing it in a dexterous way, then I'll allow that. You know, little things like that, that's when the mechanical elements come into play in the session. But most of that stuff has been prepped out in the before stages, so it's just kind of rolling with the punches, as it were.
That's really interesting. I think that I like that distinction of planning for characters in session prep and then curating for players in the moment. And I think that that is a distinction that is clear at your table and is something that I have noticed playing with your amazing group of friends, where the players are able to contribute to the story and be partial writers of the story and be audience members of the story without giving their characters the information that they shouldn't have or acting on information that the characters shouldn't have. So I think of a novel that might open up with a prologue where you where you get a view of the villain and what they're planning. Like Dune is a great example of a book that does this. The reader knows what's going to happen. It's kind of like Romeo and Juliet in that way. Mm-hmm. And if the reader was playing Paul, they would change the things that Paul does in the book because now I know what the villain is planning. Of course, I'm going to have the hero do something mm-hmm. different. I think that's a player experience thing as opposed to player intent thing. I think the more comfortable you become playing Dungeons and Dragons, the more you are able to take a step out of just trying as hard as you can to play the game right, like correctly, and you can start to dabble with being artistic in that way. Mm-hmm. How can I contribute to this story without giving my character knowledge that they wouldn't have, or having them act on knowledge that they wouldn't have? And there's lots of other things that players can do once they have that disassociation from their character, but it's definitely something that's really present in your game, and the game benefits from it immensely.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear, 100%. And I think, yeah, I think it's one of those things. You just kind of have to train yourself to know the difference between player and character knowledge, and it's something that comes with experience. You know, if you're fresh to D&D, it's going to be a bit weird. I think D&D, when you're fresh to it, is a bit weird anyway. You know, it's a bit like things like doing voices and things like that. Yeah, it's not normal in everyday life. So yeah, it's just one of those things that you get used to. And if you can have a group of people that knows what meta knowledge is and knows how to use it to help tell a story, then go for it, do it. And I've said before, and I'll say it until our son dies out, I am incredibly lucky to have the group of players that I have. So
they're great, they really are. The only thing that changes really in my list is pacing. Pacing gets put all the way at the top of the list that like was present during prep, during running the game.
It's odd that I haven't put that in, to be fair. I don't know why that didn't. That's subconsciously that hasn't come to my brain, but maybe that's because, like with the descriptions, it's something that I'm kind of always having going on in the background. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that these things that you said, pacing is the most important thing. It's interesting that you would not remember to say the most important thing, even though you consciously know that it is, or have said that it's the most important thing. And I think that speaks to how much space these skills and techniques are taking up in your mental space. As a result of how practiced you are. And unfortunately, we are running out of time, but one observation that I had earlier and forgot to mention, but just remembered is,
gone.
I think it's so interesting what the effects our jobs, the thing that we spend most of our time in life doing, have on our style of running Dungeons and Dragons. So you're a radio presenter, you prepare audio, you create art as your job, and I am a software engineer, and I spend a lot of time getting things just right, because code either works or it doesn't, and when it doesn't work, it lets you know. usually with giant error screens and crashes, and if you're particularly unlucky, you'll lose the company that you're working for a good bit of cash. Which I think it's interesting that the mechanics of the game, the numbers of Dungeons and Dragons, start to kind of float up my list as a result of that background, which is super interesting.
It comes down to the type of person you are as well, though, doesn't it? Like, you know, I'm a creative person. I put storytelling first. You're an analytical person, in a sense. I don't know if that's technically the right word, but it kind of feels right, you know. So the rules in that come up, and that's not to say that the rules aren't important to me, and I can be, you know, a stickler for them. You know, I can say, oh, this is how we're doing it, this is how it's going to be, but and you know, every DM can and should at points, but yeah, it comes down to who you are in a person, to your particular flavor and style of DMing, and that's the beauty of it, though, isn't it? Like, that's the fun of it.
Yeah, you bring your whole self to the table when you're writing, and I have a background in some creative things the same way that you have a technical background when you look at it from a different perspective. So to say that anyone is like a creative DM versus a numbers DM does not mean that you have to be one or the other, and you'll never be good at those other things. You need to practice the things that you don't have a natural disposition to, so that way you can pull those skills out like tools on a tool belt when the situation calls for it.
Definitely.
All right. I think that's a good place to wrap up. Until next time, I'm Ray.
I'm Ben.
And thanks for listening to Running Off the Rails. If you enjoyed Running Off the Rails, please like, follow, and review our show on your platform of choice. Please follow our Instagram, Running Off the Rails, for notifications whenever we release a blog post, a new episode, or new content on the DMs Guild. If you prefer a specific type of content, please send us a message on Instagram. The jam you are listening to is Hoist by Andy G. Cohen, and you can find Hoist and more of Cohen's music on the Free Music Archive. You can find links to all of our content at runningofftherails.com or on our Facebook page, Running Off the Rails.